The history of theater. The pungent aroma of sandalwood incense filled the main hall of the Temple of Knowledge, and when a gentle breeze rose in the garden, it carried with it the delicate scent of lilacs as it flew through the partially open panoramic windows. The warmth of the May morning and the joyful anticipation of a new encounter with the sage filled the hearts of the disciples with trembling excitement. The conversation was to be about theater. Many disciples were familiar with the theatrical arts and were already preparing questions, while others made cautious conjectures on the topic. There were also those who practiced silence, awaiting the keeper of knowledge. The disciples felt the radiant energy of the sage even before he appeared before them. As one, they turned their heads towards the doorway, where the majestic figure of the master had already emerged. After greeting those gathered with a warm smile, the sage walked through the hall and ascended the stage.
"Dear Master, please tell us about the theater, about how it came to be,"
spoke a tall, red-haired girl after the Keeper of Knowledge nodded to her, encouraging the conversation to begin.
"You showed us a film about Gurdjieff, about puppet theater, and about the cart, the image of which he often used. What does the word theater itself mean?"
Here the girl paused for a moment, slightly embarrassed by asking so many questions at once. But the loving and understanding gaze of the sage encouraged her.
"And how should theater affect a person?"
she asked the next question.
"When I see the theater within myself, it becomes easier to detach, but I still don't understand how to become authentic in my manifestations."
The theater emerged from shamanism, and the first actor was the shaman himself,
began the Keeper of Knowledge.
"When a shaman performs a ritual, he shows how he summons helper spirits, how they gather. Here the shaman sets out on a quest for the soul in the underworld to Erlik. He travels along the road, sees many interesting things, encounters difficulties, and finally, he bargains for the soul from Erlik in exchange for a sacrifice. All of this the shaman vividly shows and describes. He does not stop to perform and beat the drum. During this time, the audience is actively involved in this theatrical mystery and supports the shaman with their energy and emotions so that he can perform actions on a subtle level. Before people mastered speech, they described each other's actions in the form of pantomime, showing how they hunted, fled from enemies, or conversely, attacked someone. This was also a kind of ancient theater."
The disciples gathered in the hall did not take their eyes off the sage. What seemed at first glance to be a simple story of the theater became a real revelation for them. Many of the disciples were closely connected with this art and sincerely considered themselves experts. From the very first words, the keeper showed them that in reality they knew nothing about it.
"With the development of civilization, priests began to lead the theater to convey truth to people,"
the master continued.
"In the theater, different forms of art are combined. Music, recitation of poetry, dance. Even visual art such as painting and sculpture are used as decorations. By combining, they encourage people to experience what is happening on stage, to experience elevated emotions, and to embrace great ideas. Now, the religious impact of the theater has lost its primary significance, but, for example, in India, the Ramayana and the Mahabharata are still performed today. People come and watch the feats of Rama, how Krishna shares his wisdom, and quote the Bhagavad Gita. This is the real theater. In the generally accepted sense, however, the theater is a circus where they play a frivolous spectacle for the amusement of the audience. The church is separated from it. Priests conduct their emotionless and feelingless liturgies in an incomprehensible language to the listeners. This division deprived people of the opportunity to see the mystery before them as to feel elevated emotions and states, to approach the truth."
Here the sage paused briefly, giving those gathered time to reflect on what they had just learned. The brief history of the theater completely overturned the disciples' perception of it. Some now were in a calm contemplation, others shook their heads, experiencing strong emotions. Some even shared their impressions with each other. However, the desire to approach the truth very soon prompted the disciples to start asking questions. The first to raise her hand was a tall, dark-haired girl with a bright appearance. The focused gaze of her dark blue eyes betrayed her inner turmoil. Warmly smiling, the sage nodded to her, inviting her to continue the discussion.
"Master, I used to be a theatrical actress,"
she began after taking a breath.
"When you step out for a bow to the audience after a performance, from the stage you can see well how the audience is engaged in the play, which impressions it leaves them with. At first, I thought that I was giving the audience a sea of emotions and making them think. I thought that by playing heroines of classical works, I was introducing people to something sublime and beautiful. But when I played Anna Karenina, I finally realized that instead of enlightenment, I was bringing chaos. People either sneered maliciously at her throwing herself under the train, or they perceived it as something worthy of admiration, even imitation. What was happening on the subtle level during this, I can't even imagine."
You guessed completely right, and did the right thing by stopping participating in this madness. Eliza, do not blame yourself for being involved in such a process. Understanding that your work brings harm and freeing yourself from it is a huge achievement.
The Keeper of Knowledge replied, sending to the girl and everyone gathered the energy of support and acceptance.
Unfortunately, such performances or films have a very strong influence on people. We've all seen how television, which has become a common way to degrade and drive people insane, makes people crazy. Someone will watch Anna Karenina and decide that suicide is the best solution to a problem, while someone else will watch movies about the military and decide to go to war. My brother watched such nonsense, absorbed it, and decided to become a paratrooper. Soon, he was sent to Afghanistan, from where he returned disabled. This is how a model of behavior can be instilled in a person, and a fool's image can be imposed on him. Showing a person suffering, the viewer decides that this is how one should live. Showing a villain taking revenge on people, the viewer decides that he should imitate him.
"Dear Master,"
the next question came from a tall green-eyed man with ash-blonde hair tied back in a ponytail.
"If the theater was once a religious act, does it mean that amphitheaters were like temples?"
"Yes, they were like temples, but now it's all been devalued,"
the sage replied.
"Before, they showed how the gods behaved, how they interacted with humans, but now there are only clowns on stage. On television, they show soap operas, degenerate comedians, or another fraudulent prank. Those who don't stop watching such things start to believe in them, identify with this nonsense, stop thinking clearly, and ultimately go crazy. They watched soap operas and started imitating their characters, being jealous, envious, even killing. This is the power of all these crazy performances that instill insane models of behavior in people."
"Master, I have the next question."
Now, a dark-haired young man who came to the seminar for the first time addressed the Keeper of Knowledge. The new disciple was visibly nervous, formulating his thought, but the warm smile of the sage immediately encouraged him.
"Individual rituals and spiritual practices at seminars, are they essentially a kind of theater too? The mentor, as the conductor of power, plays a strong role and thus introduces people into such theatrical action. In this action, people tune into a certain flow, and thanks to this, their lives change. But people themselves cannot tune into, for example, the flow of luck. Am I right?"
"You're absolutely right in your thinking, Renat."
The sage smiled at the young man.
"A ritual is essentially a small theater because it should evoke in a person an elevated mood and emotions. It is akin to the mystery performed by a shaman, during which a certain mood is given, something is said, some emotions are conveyed, some images, so that the spectators enter the right state. Similarly, with priests who showed various deities and introduced people into the state where they could understand the truth, If a real ritual is performed, then it should evoke different emotions in a person so that it's not like in a church, where the priest monotonously reads something and he himself feels nothing. The priest is not concerned with the ideas he instills in his audience. Instead, he thinks about worldly things like food or entertainment. Therefore, everything that happens in church has no power. But if a real ritual were conducted with the right thoughts, with the necessary emotions, immersing oneself in the ideas they convey, then it would be healing and bring great mutual benefit.
Great one.
Eliza asked a new question.
We have a spiritual practice called Sans Theatre. Why is it called that? So it's also a reflection of the theatre.
Playing in the Sans Theatre, we not only reproduce actions, for example, of Christ, but also experience his emotions,
began the Keeper of Knowledge to explain.
In today's theatre, roles are played formally, without the energy and elevated emotions that the characters experience. So some actor dresses up as Christ, says his words, but does not convey his state. They simply lacked that energy. Before going on stage, they were busy with their own affairs or were smoking and drinking. On stage, they're in a weak state, and everything they portray, no matter how plausible it may seem, lacks the same energy that they could transmit to people if they experienced the emotions of Christ. In the Sans Theatre, on the contrary, the energy is of primary importance, and then comes the external component. We internally experience the states of Christ, or Buddha, and try to convey their energy to the audience.
Yes, that's right,
Eliza replied, lost in thought.
I remember when we were voicing the book, Life After Life, and looking for voices for the roles of Christ and God. I went through all the actors available, but no one could properly pronounce their lines. Even the most famous and experienced actors couldn't cope with it. You could feel from their voice that they couldn't convey their state.
Yes, you noticed everything correctly,
nodded the sage.
They don't have such a state. To achieve it, one needs to pray, fast for a long time. Meditate. But what are the actors busy with outside the stage? They're just like most people. Some are lazy and waste their lives, while others drink and misbehave. All they can do is read the text and mimic some emotions that come to their mind. And any thoughtful person will immediately sense the falsehood in their voice and understand that the actor is far from elevated states and cannot reproduce them. In the Sans Theatre, however, we strive to precisely reproduce the state of Christ, or God, and transmit it to the surrounding people so that they too experience it.
Master, it is believed that playing the role of a deceased person means inviting misfortune.
A petite brunette with expressive brown eyes joined the conversation.
But what could playing the role of a lazy pig in the Sans Theatre lead to? Can it awaken the actor's pig-like subpersonality?
It all depends on how it is played,
began the sage to explain.
If we enter the role of a lazy pig and enhance it, show as if its essence is beautiful, that lying on the side and grunting is right, then this role will negatively affect us. But in the Sans Theatre, we exaggerate, ridicule this lazy pig and show it from the ugly side to evoke rejection of this role from ourselves and others so that no one wants to be in its state. The difference lies in the presentation and living of the role. Accepting the lazy pig, reveling in its filthy personality, transmitting its silly words as truths, harms both the actor and the audience because it reinforces the parts susceptible to laziness in them. At the same time, portraying its repulsive state in an exaggerated manner will immediately evoke rejection from everyone and convey the correct state.
Master, could you elaborate more on the prejudices associated with the roles of the deceased? or the mentally impaired?
The green-eyed man asked a new question.
These roles themselves are not a bad omen. And if they are not identified with, then there will be no harm to oneself or the audience, right?
Absolutely right, Arthur,
replied the Keeper of Knowledge.
Again, it all depends on how the role is played. If an actor, playing a deceased person, thinks that they are dying to all sorts of nonsense, lies, gossip, negativity, and identifications within them, then it is beneficial for them. To the audience, they show that the deceased, like themselves, was identified with something, and then death came and severed all these identifications. There is now no opportunity to do anything foolish or harm anyone. The viewer will ponder, why do I need all this? By transmitting such states of detachment, we bring benefit to both ourselves and the audience. But if we transmit fear and horror of the unknown, experiencing it ourselves, then the harm will also be mutual. Instead of inducing detachment from everything through death, understanding that nothing in life has much value, because it will all end sooner or later, a person enters and introduces others into a state of horror, fear, and depression. Such an acting can result in severe mental disorder and hospitalization. Therefore, one must be careful about which state to transmit and convey to others to avoid disaster.
Master, how is exaggeration related to the Sands Theater? Is exaggeration just a part of theater, or are they one and the same?
Rose returned to the conversation.
Elevated states are just a part of the Sands Theater.
The sage continued to explain.
In theater, you can also show negative emotions. For example, aggression towards something bad. Negative. In addition to emotions, in theater, you can also show anything or idea. What is painting, music, literature? It is a way to transfer some idea to an emotional level, to make us experience it ourselves. Let's take, for example, the idea of loving all people. It is difficult to understand it intellectually, but how to experience it emotionally. This is where art comes to our aid. In the right execution, it will play out before us the story of Christ, who willingly sacrificed himself for the love of people. A properly played mystery of Christ will convey to people the feeling of all-encompassing love, make it understandable not only intellectually, but also emotionally. True art through music, images, theatrical performance, rituals, etc., conveys to us lofty ideas. It affects our emotions, creating a certain mood and putting us in the right state. This is the role of Orphic art. And what do we see now? What does contemporary art convey to us? What emotions does it transmit? Stupid laughter or worse, jealousy, anger, and a desire for revenge. And such an enemy is now sitting in almost every home, showing disgusting images from its screen. Therefore, we take the television and throw it in the trash, and then we begin to pray and meditate.
Many disciples in the hall nodded their heads, remembering that the television had not yet left their apartments. Despite the fact that there were books on spiritual development on their shelves, and the yoga mat never collected dust.
Great one. Was one of the purposes of the theater to observe oneself, as well as the action from the outside?
Asked a young woman whose appearance combined Eastern beauty with bright blue eyes.
After all, a person can observe oneself, analyze one's actions, and then understand that inside oneself, there is the same theater with many roles.
Yes, Margot, you're thinking correctly,
smiled the Keeper of Knowledge in response.
But such a goal exists only for the advanced, for those who strive to delve deeper into understanding the theater. The actors themselves not only perform on stage, but also become spectators of themselves. Because to play a role convincingly, one must analyze it in their mind. Inside the actors, there is a theater of multiple roles, in which they play the roles they have studied. By observing a role without being it, the actor begins to understand that life is a theater, and we all are actors and spectators in this drama of life.
Master, they say that life is a game, and it's as if the Atman watches this game, meaning it doesn't judge anything, and it doesn't matter what it watches.
Margot shared her thoughts.
So how does it work with us when we play different roles? Does our spiritual part play them? When we wake up, who decides which role to play?
At first, roles are played unconsciously by conditioning.
The sage continued to explain.
Initially, you play the role of a daughter, then eventually a wife, mother, grandmother, and so on. All of this is demonstrated and instilled, so no conscious effort is required. People unconsciously reproduce roles formed within them by a sick society. But upon awakening in the morning, a person begins to wonder why they should reproduce all these roles. They only drag him deeper into the swamp. What should he do to break free from there? Also play roles, but consciously play stalking, so that no one interferes with fulfilling his desires. He conveyed his condition to others. They believed and approved, and the person himself began to act according to his plan. By consciously playing a role, you quickly master it, and everything turns out as planned.
Here, the Keeper of Knowledge fell silent for a moment, allowing his disciples to ponder how each of them would apply stalking in their mundane lives. The disciples became excited, anticipating how much more interesting and liberating their lives would become now that interacting with ignorant people would no longer be a dangerous burden but a spiritual practice. Satisfied with the effect, he continued.
Here's another example. A young woman was taught at work to flatter her boss, be modest, and ask for nothing. Then she comes to the school, where she is explained that she doesn't have to be modest in front of her boss, but at the same time, she needs to praise him and ask for what is needed. This is how we consciously play another role, not that of a modest, submissive worker, but on the contrary, that of a beautiful and graceful one who gets what she wants. Playing the role of a modest, passive girl, she stayed on a low salary and endured humiliation from her superiors. She consciously played the role of an active, liberated woman, received both a bonus and went on vacation whenever she wanted. When we consciously play a role, understanding why and how, everything in our lives begins to change for the better. We begin to make efforts and get rid of the ugly roles that enslave us, preventing us from achieving anything in life. Our behavior is already being changed by the spiritual part. It uses the acquired knowledge to choose a good role that will give us what we need.
Master, does stalking also belong to the Sands Theater?
Eliza asked a new question.
Yes, absolutely.
Nodded the Keeper of Knowledge.
Often we have no choice but to play stalking. Since childhood, they instill in us that we need to tell the truth to our parents, to the family, even to the police on the street. Why do they instill this in us? For the sake of some ideals of goodness and justice? No, people just want to control us. Mother says, I'm the closest person to you, so tell me the truth. Don't hide anything. The child trusts her and starts sharing everything. But the mother sees that he deviates from her notions of righteousness, and then she attacks and immediately starts to correct his brain so that he grows up like a zombie. Her work is continued by teachers at school and university, and then higher-level structures come in, like the police. They all need the truth from us to catch us in time, not to let us be free and manifest ourselves as we ourselves want. In response, we will receive aggression and a desire to average us. What's left for us to do to avoid this? Stalking comes to our aid. To achieve our goal, a person must disguise it, create the impression that they are busy with something else. They decided to attend a seminar, but to avoid provoking aggression from others, they pretended to be sick asked for money if they needed it, and went to develop themselves. This is stalking. Those around them showed them pity and gave them money. But if they had said directly that they were going to the seminar, in response, they would have received aggression. Or another example, a woman decided to go to an ashram to study Tantra, tells her husband about it, and asks for money for a ticket. In response, there is aggression, criticism, threats. Therefore, everything should be arranged differently. Understandable images are given to those around us, which they accept. And at the same time, we do what we decided to do. By playing stalking, we say and present one thing, but do something of our own, understanding that this is the only way to achieve any goal. We arrange everything so that we are treated correctly, pitied, for example, and we ourselves, at the same time, will achieve our goals.
When the sage finished speaking, a middle-aged woman with chestnut hair tied in a bun raised her hand. Her brown eyes expressed both weariness of life and the emerging determination to change something.
Master, society has raised us in a way that we are too lazy to come up with a suitable cover-up story. So we speak the truth instead of using stalking,
she began.
But coming to the spiritual school, I noticed that I actually have a lot of cunning in me. Am I right to understand that when we live in society, due to the desire to be good, to please others, and to avoid their aggression, we resort to cunning on a small scale without realizing it? How is it that along with the desire to always tell the truth, we are also taught cunning and craftiness? These seem like completely incompatible things at first glance.
Viola, it's actually quite simple,
the Keeper of Knowledge remarked ironically.
Yes, we were taught to tell the truth, but we saw what we got for it. Coming home from school, a child honestly said they got a bad grade. In response, they were punished. They tricked and drew a better grade in their diary instead of the erased bad one, and got candy. That's how we're taught to lie, and we start doing it from an early age, unconsciously, not understanding what's happening to us. You can't tell everything. You have to present yourself in a good light, like, I got a good mark instead of a bad one, so they won't yell at me or punish me. Growing up, a person continues to lie and scheme. However, if he enters the spiritual school, he will be told to repent, confess his sins, and not try to cover them up with something good. A person must understand that if he starts hiding or embellishing his sin, he will never be free from it, and will spiritually decay.
Dear Master,
Viola asked with excitement in her voice,
can stalking lead to sin?
Stalking is applicable only to social life, and its goal is only one, to get rid of external control, so it does not lead to sin.
The sage continued to explain.
In the spiritual life, which is inaccessible to society, we must reject any lie because, like sin, it will torment us and lead to degradation. Therefore, we must speak directly about sin and repent in order to rid ourselves of it. There is no other way to liberation.
Master, I want to learn more about what ideas art conveys.
Eliza returned to the conversation.
You told us that art conveys various ideas and moods. There was recently such a case, a well-known contemporary artist taped a banana to the wall and sold this artwork for $120,000 at an auction. I can't understand what drove those people who bid on this ridiculous banana. It will rot in 3 days, and then you won't be able to resell it like a Picasso painting. What was this madness? Was it a herd mentality or some stupid competition for the sake of appearances?
You're thinking in the right direction. There's really no art in this.
The Keeper of Knowledge nodded with a smile to his disciple.
During the auction, the buyers were driven by the game, the thrill of the moment. At such moments, a person's understanding of what's happening shuts down. Nonsense ensues, and they want to participate in it. Someone might take a canvas, mess it up, and call it art, and those gathered will begin to praise it. If this were happening on the street, and someone started selling what a dog left behind, no sane person would buy it. But when a full room of people gathers, and the presenter says that the mess is a work of art, they agree and start bargaining for the right to own this rubbish. A situation is created in which a person is as if hypnotized and doesn't understand the absurdity of the situation. Suggestions, and then excitement, intoxicate a person and rob them of their reasoning. And then they're giving away their money for ugliness that gives nothing to anyone except profit to those who didn't hesitate to take advantage of human stupidity.
Can such a situation be avoided?
Renat asked a new question.
After all, none of us is immune from ending up in a crowd or under the influence of some influential figure.
Recognizing the danger of the situation is already half the battle,
continued the sage.
We understand that smearing paint on canvas has nothing to do with art, and the popularity of such things is only thanks to societal hypnosis. Don't forget that art is the transmission of ideas on an emotional level, and the rubbish we discussed has no ideas. Nowadays, people have stopped understanding what is art, partly because of television, which can hypnotize you right there in your apartment. They show some art expert on TV, and naive people start believing his nonsense. That's why we must calmly analyze all the information coming to us and steer clear of the crazy crowd. And as I said, throw the TV away.
Master, I want to share something,
Viola said with inspiration in her voice. Now, a smile played on the face of the previously tired woman, and her eyes sparkled with delight. The master nodded to her, and she continued.
I am greatly inspired by looking at the paintings of Rorik, especially under the music of transformation. It immediately feels like the paintings convey a tremendous spiritual intent, and as a result, wisdom comes. Such a special, elevated state in which one wants to think more about the eternal. Am I right to understand that it is very useful to turn to spiritual artists?
Yes, you are doing everything absolutely right. Icons and paintings of spiritual content are very useful.
The Keeper of Knowledge approved her choice.
You are getting acquainted with real art, which conveys enlightened ideas to us. Looking at them, we begin to think about something sublime, bright, great, and experience it emotionally. And what can one think about while looking at a smear or the same banana? Nothing except maybe laugh if we are not intoxicated by the influence of the crowd. I will repeat now what our conversation started with. The division of art into secular and religious has done great harm to people. Secular art does not convey great ideas to a person and does not awaken an elevated state. Instead, it sets an example of jealousy, selfishness, and other negative feelings. When all art was religious, any music, painting, or theatrical performance served to some spiritual purpose, and people who came into contact with such art began to develop.
Master, what value do paintings by Van Gogh or Picasso have? They are also involved in societal hypnosis,
Arthur inquired.
These paintings are worth millions of dollars, and people who buy them usually hide them from others' eyes because they fear for their safety. So, is it just a status symbol? A wealthy person sits in front of the painting, smokes a cigar, drinks whiskey, and feels like the master of life. Does it mean that the value of such paintings lies only in the price and the status they give to the owner?
You're overestimating it. Such a person might not even look at the painting,
the Keeper of Knowledge replied.
It's enough for him to have an expensive painting to show off. Such a person doesn't perceive the painting as a piece of art that conveys an important idea to him. He feels no inspiration, doesn't experience any elevated emotions, and doesn't develop spiritually. All he needs is to feel cool, and you can brag about anything that has a high price. This way, a person feeds his sense of importance, his selfishness, and makes naive, impressionable people respect him. All of this has nothing to do with art.
Master, what if someone likes, for example, Salvador Dali?
Eliza said thoughtfully.
Let's say the famous painting with the melting clocks. Is there a difference between the original painted by the artist's brush and a reproduction? After all, you can also look at a copy. I'm thinking, can the original be an object of power and transmit its energy?
You're thinking in the right direction.
The sage smiled at her.
But the significance lies in something called sanctity. For example, an icon in a church. Thousands of people prayed to it for many years, and it began to transmit a special energy. A magical object, made, for example, by a shaman who instilled some spirit into it, also possesses its own special energy. But a copy of such objects of power won't have it because it will only resemble the original externally. If someone simply painted something original without trying to convey their state, then there would be no difference between the original and the reproduction. Neither of these objects has any energy, spirits, or connection to any saint. There's nothing of the sort.
Another conversation with the Keeper of Knowledge, full of revelations about seemingly familiar things, came to an end. However, the disciples were not going to disperse, awaiting a new practice that would strengthen their impressions of what was discussed and help them fully experience elevated states and emotions.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.